Hey, everybody. We are back again. London and Chianka doing Strip Search, the comic strip podcast. I'm Pete Chianka. I am here, as always, with Dave London. How are you, Dave?
I am doing well, Pete. Thanks.
This is our second of two episodes that we are recording this July, and we're just very happy to be here. I'm in a joyous mood.
We're just happy not to be in the heat wave anymore.
Yes, because it's gotten cooler, and we are in the air conditioning, and there was some very exciting news in the comic strip world. It looks like there's going to be a BC movie, Dave. You're familiar with BC.
You know, not only am I familiar with it, but and this goes way back when we were starting out, I had actually wrote letters to various cartoonists asking for advice and if they were nice enough to be willing to send me a sample of their work. Johnny Hart, who did BC, was one of the nicest people on the planet.
Really?
He wrote me back and sent me an original BC strip. I have it framed in my studio. He sent me a pen that he used to draw the strip, which, funny enough, it's just a very basic pen, nothing fancy. It was sort of this blue sort of flare-type pen, felt-type pen.
Wow. I'm very impressed. I did not know that story. So did you love BC, or you just pulled him off a list of cartoons?
No, I was always a fan of Johnny
Hart. I actually always liked the strip. You know, a lot of those old, you know, the strips of that era seem a little cheesy in retrospect, but his always had a little bit of an edge to it. I liked it a lot. And it'll be interesting to see what they do about the movie. It's the company is Parallax Media Ventures. And the feature-length film is going to be called BC Back to Civilization, they're hoping to get that out in 2021. And obviously it's going to be animated and 3D like all of these are these days. And it should be really interesting. I mean, this got Dave and I talking about movies based on comic strips as opposed to comic books. Obviously, comic book movies are all the rage, as they say. And the comic strip movies have been fewer and further between and not necessarily as successful. Although, I have a list, and I think Dave does also, of movies based on comic strips that we would recommend that we wanted to talk about a little. And first, a bit of trivia, Dave. I don't know if you know this. Blondie and Dagwood. There were 28 Blondie and Dagwood movies made between 1938 and 1950.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Live action Blondie and Dagwood, and one was worse than the next.
Really?
I remember watching some as a kid in reruns, and they were not that good.
You didn't see them live in the theater when they.
I didn't know. Okay. Not between 1938 and 1950. Right. But so it was a thing at one point, even if it isn't now. I will mention, and I don't know, I don't think this is a popular opinion, but one of my favorite comic strip movies of all time was Robert Altman's Popeye.
Really?
1980, starring Robin Williams. Very early. Robin Williams got really panned at the time. Shelley Duvall was Olive Oil. But I thought it was really as creative and funny and weird and off kilter, and the sets were amazing. And
I remember that seeing it as a kid. And I do remember the sets, just of the I don't know what you would call that, in sort of like in the Oscars world with the
set design,
I guess. Yeah, just really, yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah. And Robin Williams, as we now know, I mean, he can do anything, and he did a great Popeye. You know, right. His little asides. It was. You know, it captured Popeye to me, in addition to the tremendous forearms.
Hey, I would tell you one of my favorite movies that derived from a comic strip, Flash Gordon.
Oh, yeah. I had completely forgotten about Flash Gordon.
Not the least of it, as you probably know, I'm a huge Queen fan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Queen did the soundtrack for that. It's a very cheesy movie, by the way. It is, you know, I mean, you look at it, it doesn't stand the test of time as far as, even back then, the special effects, I think, were purposely cheesy. But you know who's in it? So Timothy Dalton is in it.
That's right, I recall that.
I think, I'm trying to remember, the guy who played Flash Gordon, Sam Jones, used to be a football player.
Yep, yep. I think there is a movement afoot to get a Flash Gordon reboot. I don't know if we'll see That will be.
But anyways, you've got the list of some of the others. Why don't you talk about a couple of others before we move on?
Yeah, I know we don't have a lot of time, but I thought Dick Tracy with Warren Beatty was not bad, not great, but it definitely had its moments. And that's another one where the look of it almost overshadowed the, the story. And for a more recent. I would recommend The Adventures of Tintin. Did you see that?
I did not.
I would get that rent that one for the kids. It's a Spielberg directed and Peter Jackson, I think, produced. They sort of worked on it together. Just fun, funny, amazing animation. It's one of these that I'm not a huge fan of the modern 3D movement. Like my eyes tend to like glaze over after a while, and you don't even realize you're watching 3D. But this one really made the most of that 3D technology, and it was just a lot of fun. And of course, there's there have been several feature length Peanuts movies, and most recently that there was a Peanuts movie in that 3D animation style. Did you see that one?
I loved it. Yeah, I did see it. I loved it. My kids loved it. I was going to say that was, yeah.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job with that. Yeah.
I mean, there's been other sort of TV sort of versions of cartoon strips. You know, there was a Garfield for a while. They had, television shows like that. It's a little different than what we're talking about.
Though. Right. There were two Garfield feature films, which I'm embarrassed to say I did not see either. Bill Murray did the voice of Garfield.
I'm not sure I saw them either.
I did not see either. So keep an eye out for the BC movie. We'll keep you posted on that. And I'd like to see, I've always held out hope for a Calvin and Hobbes movie. I know it will never happen.
That will never happen.
Because Bill Watterson doesn't want anybody knowing what they sound like or whatever, Bill.
Right.
And he listens to this podcast too.
I'm sure it'll be first on his list.
Yes, we are going to be right back with our very special guest today, Steve McGinn of Cartoons by Steve-O.
And also, I should mention very quickly that the new edition of Comic Strip Cartoonist magazine is out from the Comics Arts Press, and on the cover, Pet Peeves, our comic strip, the comic strip I do with Dave. We are featured in the magazine along with some great other features, and we'd encourage you to pick that up. If you go to our website, petpeevescomic.com, and scroll down, you'll see a link to it, and you can find out more about it there. We're really psyched to be a part of that.
Okay, we're back to Strip Search, the comic strip podcast. I'm Pete Chianka. I'm here with my co-host, Dave London, and we are here with our very special guest, Mr. Steve McGinn. How are you, Steve?
Oh, great. It was kind of hard getting here, but I finally made it.
I'm glad you managed to make your way to our little corner of the world. Steve is the cartoonist behind Toons by Steve-O, which is, you may have seen in either online or in publications like the Funny Times.
Yep.
And I have to say, in looking at it, that you got an off-kilter sense of humor there, Steve.
I'm kind of an off-kilter person, so I'm just being myself, to be honest.
For people who haven't seen it, it definitely has, I mean, how would you describe it, I guess? I'll let you talk about what your approach is, how you would describe the panel.
Well, it's just about anything, really. I mean, I used to work for a paper called the Beacon Hill Times, which is a really nice paper. And there you would call somebody in and they'd give you a list of stories that was coming out and you'd sort of try to work around that. Or we always had the default, which was trash, rats, basically trash and rats. Yeah. Oh, dog do. So here, it's just, I wasn't really under anyone's, I got involved in social media a couple years ago and I submitted to a website called Dirty Old Boston. It was a really weird story about how that happened, but I started doing stuff about Boston and Boston in the old days, really from post-war till the 80s. And then the guy kept telling me, Jim Botticelli is a really nice guy, says, hey, you should really start your own Facebook page. And I was like, I'll get to it at some point. And I finally did. And I said to myself, this is just me. I can do whatever the heck I want. So as opposed to sort of going within, sort of a set of guidelines or whatever like that, you do something and you just do it and it's you. I mean, when somebody's paying you to do a certain thing and they're saying, don't do this, don't do that, you know, you got to think that way, you know. But if you're just doing, you know, an internet site and you're just like, hey, sky's the limit, we'll do whatever we want to do. So it's me, basically, on ink and paper.
I mean, that's the great thing about, you know, sort of the social media revolution. I think it's given so much opportunity for cartoonists, you know, and lots of other people. But, you know, as far as what we talk about here, to get your work out in front of people, it used to be such sort of a rarefied opportunity for this select few to get their work seen. And now, you know, if you have the dedication and the drive and the, you know, the sense of humor, you could get it out there.
Yep.
And this one is definitely worth looking at. I mean, some of them, you know, like one of my favorites that I saw recently was where you had this sort of like homeless bum on the street with the sign that says, you know, can't find password and login name and password, which I just completely screwed up your punchline. It was much funnier.
It's actually in the spirit of the joke, because not being able to remember something has these grave overtones.
I know, and it just struck me as so funny. It's like, yes, that's exactly how I feel when that happens to me.
Yep.
So is it basically just, you know, so it's your observations on, and it ranges from that to completely bizarre, like, you know, the gangsters who are shooting somebody on pajama day, and the one guy forgot it.
He doesn't believe him. He thinks he just got lazy and is like, I'm not a fan of pajama day, so I'm, you know, he made everyone else look silly for wearing pajamas or so. That comes like directly out of my daughter. We didn't have pajama days, or did, I mean, maybe as fraternities, which I was never part of, but they have pajama days now. I don't remember it myself as all, you know.
Yeah.
But oh, sorry.
I'm just going to jump in and say it's different now, because like when we were in school, we actually went to school. Now they have, like, you know, graduation from, you know, pre-kindergarten. We didn't have that. We just went home at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. We went home and watched Gilligan's Island, which is why I know every single episode.
Yeah.
But
oh, yeah. We could get into Gilligan's Island plots if we really want to go off the rails here.
I'm a ginger guy, so sorry. I know everyone loves Marianne, but
yeah, I know you're allowed to like ginger. That's okay.
Okay.
You know, between that and the Brady Bunch, we could be here all day. Did you want to talk? I know Dave usually likes to ask about, you know, how you approach your work as a cartoonist on the more technical side.
The question I typically will ask our guests is the materials they use to draw. Have they done digital? I know the answer because I've known you for a little bit, and so I know where this is headed, but I'll let you tell our listeners.
I know my answers are all very short, one word. Can I tell you a little bit about this one? Because it's kind of funny in my mind. I did it. I was working at the Bank of Boston, which would really date me. And I had to do this report, and people weren't looking at it. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start drawing a picture on the report, and people will pay attention. And they sort of did. And I said, you know what? I'm going to draw a picture on the report, and it's going to be of the people who need to get the report. And I'm going to turn their life into a comic strip, and this way I'll at least have proof that they held the report in their hands. And the way they got the report in the 90s, the early to mid 90s, was that you faxed it. Okay, that's how you got reports typically back then. People would go and check the fax machine. So what happened is I'd use a ballpoint pen. It'd kind of show up sketchy, you know, that'd be the gradation and everything. All these fax machines were not laser at the time. So I got a pen, like a Sharpie, and it was a little too thick. And then I finally got a flare pen, which no offices order because they dry up in like 10 seconds. And no one will order them. Like, all right, I got to get those. And so I just got a flare pen somewhere, and I drew it, and I put it on the fax machine. Boom. It was absolutely perfect. And from there on out, I used a flare pen because when I was younger, I would use a Nico and a Pilot and all these. And the problem with those is I would never finish. I would keep drawing. Do you ever have that happen when you're using a really fine line and you're like, it's not quite done? When you use a thicker pen, you're like, I'm done. That's it. You know, at least for me, it was a very liberating moment, and it faxed really well. And on top of that, I had to get it done by a certain time because the report had to be in at X amount of time. So another sort of weird Zen thing that happened was I did it. It was done. I can do no more. Boom. That's
it. So what do you do about deadlines now that nobody's waiting for a report?
Well, I know. That's the funny part. Get it done within, you know. Once again, that's a social media thing. You can just, you know, it's pie in the sky. it doesn't really matter in that sense, but the style of me now is that I'll get paper that's been stolen, you know, my wife's where she works. And I use that. I set it up on a clipboard that I have a bunch of pieces of paper underneath. I always sit at one section on this old white couch that we have. I have all these ideas ready. I should probably have premised with that. You guys might get into it later. And I pick one that I'm going to do unless something comes across. And I find models. Though you can have a coffee can that's in, you know, in your cupboard, or you could have a Google image, or you can have a real thing in front of you. I had to do I did the Monopoly guy the other day, and I got my daughter's Monopoly game out, and I drew, was it Chance or something like that? I used one of the cards to draw the guy. And I get a black flare pen, a whiteout pen, and a ballpoint black pen, and I just start going. And that's it. If I screw up, I have to use the whiteout, and I have to let the whiteout dry. You should see me waving the paper around, and then I.
Dave looks horrified.
Yeah, I know. I did use Dave's Cintiq one time, and so you know I should probably disclose that, but I have actually done it before. I guess all that says I'm old school, right? But to me, the gag, the drawing is very secondary to the writing. My artwork really has to catch up with my writing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, sometimes the writing has to catch up with the artwork. So if it was me, the artwork, I don't consider my art to be all that great. I think it's improving. You know, I think it catches it succeeds in telling the gag. But it's got a long way to go. It's serviceable at this point. But the writing is really more what I'm proud of, to be honest with you. So,
and you had mentioned, so you have like a series of ideas laid out, like, you know, okay, today this is what I'm going to expound upon.
Well, Dave has seen The Beast before, right? And he was afraid I was going to lose it at some point. It's this giant folder. And I just got him at 2,500 now or something like that. And I'm walking around and I pull out. You want to say the words? Everybody says the same thing.
George Costanza.
Ah, thank you. So I probably have 20 ideas that I've written out, you know, just today. I can show you guys. Let's see.
Dave, describe that wallet. I can't do it justice.
We need another seat in here just for the wallet, I think.
So this particular gag here, I don't know why, it says he was the child of vapors, meaning people who vape. So... I don't even know what I'm going to do with that, but it'll be a police reporter or something on the news. But I just pulled a random idea. And what I do is I take the ideas out of my wallet, put them on this giant piece of paper that just keeps growing and going. And then most importantly is I have to block it, just like a guy that choreographs a scene. You know, you have to say like, okay, now we're on stage here. We have to, when you guys are drawing, you realize you have to put things in the foreground first and then work your way backwards. Unless you're doing a New Yorker style cartoon where they always want the writing on the bottom, you have to account for the word bubbles. I've attempted in the New Yorker to sneak by thought bubbles because I don't know how to do those on the bottom. Do you guys know how to do that? Sorry, Dave.
No, just you brought up the New Yorker and something that we wanted to get in with you. Or you have some stories about showing up at the New Yorker. I know you wanted to tell the listeners. So this seems like a good segue here. Can you start with how you first got involved with that?
Sure. Stories about showing up are plenty, but stories about getting in, I have none. Well, it's one of these things where my dad had New Yorker stuff, has been a writer his whole life. He was a journalist, and he just loved the New Yorker cartoons. And we all drew as kids, I'm guessing, right? So you can't...
I should mention that I am... you think you have issues with your art. I'm strictly a word guy, and that's Dave's department.
I know Dave can write, though, too, so...
Yeah, he doesn't really need me. I'm hoping he doesn't figure that out.
We take Dave to the desert island, right, if we need a package.
I'm really stuck if he ever wakes up and says, wait a minute.
Stan Lee doesn't draw, right?
I could do that part, too.
Well, some of the greatest partnerships of all time are, you know what I mean? Yep. One guy and the other, so... basically... it's just like one of these things like, oh, I these guys are so funny. I mean, you know, certain eras have been more funny than others, but, you know, who doesn't like Charles Adams or George Price or George Booth? Or, you know, we can all just instantly identify us more because we do cartoons, but I mean, what a great thing. I mean, you would just love to be one of those guys, you know, and who's never heard of The New Yorker, although there are, like, my daughter's generation, they don't really know much about it, to be honest. So, you know, I was a little afraid that, you know, at some point, because of print media, that it might, you know, go the way of all the other stuff. But hopefully it won't. You know, that's they've infused a lot of new blood lately. And, in fact, the fact that the new blood seems to like what they're doing and really into it, then maybe it'll make a comeback. You know, it's never left, but print media, as we all know, yeah, has been having a very rough time.
I mean, The New Yorker's done a pretty good job of going digital, you know, in and of themselves. And one of the few things that is never behind a paywall for them is their cartoon caption contest.
No, you're right.
Anybody can look at those, and anybody can enter.
Yep.
And I do it every week, and I have yet to get one in there. But I think that's, you know, that's one of the ways they keep the interest going.
Have you gotten in the three ever?
Never.
Yeah, it's the same. Have you ever actually heard anything about anything at all?
Like anyone?
A response? Period.
No. No. But, you know, I mean, I'm not suiting real cartoons. I'm just entering the dark cartoons.
Yeah, unless actually some action happens, you just, like, you know, I don't think you ever have any contact whatsoever, unless you go into the office yourself and you talk to people and everything.
So what happened when you went down there?
So the first time I went, I've been meaning to go my whole life. And when I heard that Bob Mankoff, the editor for like 20 years or whatever, when I heard that he was stepping down, I was like, oh, my God, I got to go. I can't not go. You know, because I'm such a fan of their cartoons. So I went down, and everybody on the planet went down. You know, I thought he was going to sit down and light a pipe and say, well, Steve, you know, let's go over one of these, you know, inch by inch or something like that. But I got down there. He shakes my hand. He goes, look at that crowd out there. I'll definitely promise to look at these. And he threw them on top of like a literal volcano of folders. And he goes, shake your hand, selfie, next. You know, so that was a cool experience. There were other things that happened. I got to sit down with George Booth for like many hours. But that wasn't a real experience. You know, it was, but it's not. All of us want feedback. Like you just gave me feedback on some cartoons, and like I can go somewhere with that. You know what I mean? And even if it's incredibly negative, it's like fun to hear. So the last time I went down, I met with a new cartoon editor, and she really, really took a lot of time.
Wow.
But I got to admit, that's the first time I've ever had feedback from The New Yorker, because you mail things in the old days, you get a little slip of paper back that says, no thanks. And I often think that there's no DNA on those. There's no actual evidence of human contact.
Yeah.
That a robot just used to pick them up and put them in the self-addressed stamped envelope. Thank you. 100 points.
Well, it is funny. You know, Dave and I have been submitting to syndicates for, you know, several decades now. But we took a long break when we both got married and had kids and, you know, sort of.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. So we, you know, and in recent years, we said, okay, let's get back to this. You know, kids are a little older. We have a little more free time than we used to. And that led to Pet Peeves, our current comic strip. We said, you know, just for old time's sake, let's send this out to syndicates again. And I swear we got the same rejection letter from King Features that we got in 1989 or 1990, whenever we first sent it. The wording, I think it was mimeographed. I mean,
the little numbers at the bottom.
Yes. I mean, it was, they had not changed a thing about the rejection. And similar to what you said, I can't imagine a human was involved in that transaction.
There's
at
no
all.
Chance. No chance at all. Yeah.
But it's part of the rite of passage for any sort of creative endeavor, the rejection letter.
I would say a rite of passage for a gag guy is to sit in that room, you know, and now it's at the World Trade Center, but it used to be at Times Square, I believe. Condé Nast building, either way. A rite of passage is to sit in that room. Sam Gross was in there, George Booth. I mean, you're just there and you're just, it's kind of like, you know, you show up to play 5-on-5 basketball, and like every great professional basketball player is there, and you're like, oh, can I have winner, something like that, and you're like, you know, you're lucky if you just stick around the whole day and just sort of watch the magic happen, because these are guys that if you're a New Yorker person, they're your hero. And if there's a lot of, there's a really, really a lot of young bucks at it now too, the people in their 20s and early 30s that are doing it as well. And you can see a lot of them. It's very diversified now. It's very female, much more so than it used to be. I think they're trying to modernize, catch up with the rest of the world, which is a good thing. And the fact they have a lot of young people will attract other young people to print media. But a rite of passage, I think, if you're a real gag fan or a New Yorker fan, is to sit in that room with all those people, because I love the NCS lunches. That's another thing in National Cartoonist Society. Just being there with a bunch of cartoonists is such a pleasure.
Yeah. And we've talked on the show before about how, you know, that's another thing social media has done, is sort of brought that community together. It used to be such a, you know, sort of solitary endeavor. And now it feels like there's just a real network for cartoonists that maybe wasn't there before. And it seems like Boston has a real, you know, steady cartoonist community that I'm not sure if that's the case everywhere you go. It seems to be very strong here.
You know what? I found another place just from social media alone, is that for some reason, Wisconsin has awful. Yeah. Of all the people, you know, of all the places, I've noticed that a lot of people, like Funny Times people, there's sort of is it University of Wisconsin that's a little bit of a kind of a freewheeling place?
Mm.
So they're an awful, and you know, it's a cheap place to live. And so I'm finding a lot of funny people coming out of Wisconsin. I have no idea why that is.
A lot of cheese gags.
And, right.
Yeah.
But cliche. So Boston, I don't know what Racine or something like that.
I think people who are in the industry, cartoonists, just have found each other in these different locales and have gathered. And I mean, well, you know, it's been a while since I've been involved with the group. But when I first joined the group, I mean, I didn't know any other cartoonists, because back then you didn't have the way to meet people. Now, with, as you say, with social media, you can get this community going, because cartooning is a solitary, you know, thing where you're sitting at your drawing board back at home. And you don't have the sort of, it's not like a job you go into and, you know, have the office environment. So this is a way to get that community going.
Yeah, when I was at the Beacon Hill Times, there was another editorial guy. And the first time we met at a party, we would go back and forth. And he did a cartoon about a dragon that lived in the Salt and Pepper Bridge, the Longfellow Bridge. And you kind of walked in the room and we like eyed each other like the two dogs, you know, there was sort of a little bit of territory going on. And then we eventually, but we were never like super friendly. It was like, I know you, you know me, you know, and at these NCS things, I think they're just great. Everyone's like really supportive and, you know, it's just, I keep telling people how fun it is. It's just, you know, it's like one of my friends who just sneak in, you know, and just try to like get in there. I know that Mark and my wife have been playing Scrabble a lot, and my wife's very, what is it called, Words with Friends? My wife's really good, and she's beating him a lot. So I mean, he's beating her a lot, sorry. And I'm sure she's happy I just said that, but she's found somebody who's, you know, an apt opponent. So, you know, we still haven't seen Mark's Ruben yet. We all want to see it, right?
Is that, you're talking about Mark Parisi?
Yes, I am. He's just a great guy. He's such an inspiration for all of us, you know what I mean? And to have him show up is just amazing. You know, he's been doing this for so long.
Yeah. And, yeah, we had him on. He was one of our first guests on the podcast. He was very gracious, and it was great to have him. And yeah, I mean, I remember him interviewing him 20-something years ago. I was working at the paper in his hometown, and given my interest in cartoons, I admitted I learned he lived there. I was like, I got to talk to this guy, and he's just as gracious now as he was then.
Yeah. Very lucky this region is to have him, as with a lot of other people. So
we're coming up on a half an hour, so before we run out of time, we want to give you the opportunity to tell people, where are they going to find your stuff? How can they look you up?
Okay. So if you get on Facebook, you can just put in Tunes by Steve-O. That's T-O-O-N-S space B-Y space S-T-E-V-O. People sometimes put Steve-O with an E, but it's S-T-E-V-O. You can also, this happened really weirdly, you can put in this word, write it down, it's all one word, comxtoonsstevo, and then put it in Google Images, and it'll come up with like 400 cartoons right next to each other. So considering these only started coming in 2015, I'm baffled by that. But
that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Were you affiliated with it?
Well, there was a great syndicate run by a guy out of Florida called the Comics Box Syndicate. And unfortunately, he had to shut it down recently. Some stuff was going on with his family. It's the same story that all of us have had, right? And hopefully he'll be back. But sorry, I was going to mention that, but because they shut down, I wasn't going to bring it up. Web crawlers found this thing. And they just started. Does anyone know how those work at all?
Nobody knows how that works.
Right. So web crawlers found these things that were being submitted to the Comics Box Syndicate. My thing is still out there. A lot of our stuff's still out there. John Carter, Jim Schoenbill, a lot of guys that are in Funny Times, actually. And the web crawlers just started finding all these cartoons. And so that's how they ended up on Google Images. So if you tap on them one after the other, you'll see that they're in the Comics Box Syndicate.
Excellent. All right, we'll put a link to that, too, on our website. What the heck?
Perfect. And Funny Times newspaper, of course, every month most of the time. They've been wonderful. I was just I can't say enough about them. They're a great paper. Do you guys know anything about it? Because I'll just tell
you. Tell our listeners about it. I've been seeing mention of it for years. It feels like they have a great reputation.
Well, you know, the thing about Funny Times, and it's a labor of love. You're not going to make like New Yorker kind of money or anything like that. But it started in Cleveland in 1985 or 86 or something like that. This husband and wife team, and they were just really about the humor. You know what I mean? That's all they cared about. I don't know how they manage this, but they have no advertisers. I think they run off of subscriptions, which, if you ask me right now, the best art form going on right now is probably cable television, and they don't have advertisers either. And so you can sort of do whatever the hell you want if you're not, oh, well, you can't say anything bad about that. You know, you can't, you know, our advertisers will pull out. Funny Times can do whatever the heck they want. And so they'll run some of my weirder stuff. They'll run weird stuff all the time. They have Andy Borowitz every issue. They have Dave Barry. They have probably half of the guys in New Yorker cartoonists, guys and gals. They can just do whatever. It's kind of like the internet. But if you did something to the New Yorker and you offended like one of their advertisers, it's already hard enough to get in. But if you do that, you're never getting in.
You're stuck.
You're stuck, right? Because advertisers do pick up a lot of their bill. And you're also in the Condé Nast building, and they don't want to get into trouble. Yes. And if you're in the Funny Times building, the Funny Times owns the building. It's in Cleveland, so it's not that expensive. But Funny Times owns the building that they you know work in. So they don't have the same, you know, they're not as there's not a lot of strings attached to what they do. So,
well, we like that.
Yes, exactly. If all of us could just
have no strings.
Exactly.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming in. It was great talking to you. And everybody, make sure to come to our website, petpeevescomic.com/podcast, or click on podcast, where we're going to have links to Steve's work, some examples, some links to the weird random web crawler results that he let us in on, and links back to him so you could find his work. So thanks again, Steve.
Oh, hey, thanks so much. The pleasure's all mine, you guys. All right.